From Clovis to Kingsburg, from Fresno to Bakersfield, and everything in between, we've got you covered. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, your number one source for high school highlights, riveting talk, and hometown heroes. And here is your host, Paul Metters.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN, your local sports leader, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, as always, every Saturday from 10 to 12. We love chopping it up about all the good stuff that's happening in the Central Section, in the Central Valley, right in the middle of our wonderful state of California. Thank you guys for joining in and listening. We're at the tail end, guys. We are at the tail end of the school year of the show, wrapping up year number 5. Have two more episodes left. The 6th and the 13th will be my final episode of the year, and happy to report that we're rolling it back. Year number 6 is going to happen. The contract is signed. Take a little bit of a summer break and come back strong in August. Super pumped about that, man. This is certainly a blessing. I love talking about the games, the athletes, interviewing other media members. It's tons of fun. Hope you guys enjoy what you listen to, the insights that I hopefully bring, the coaching that that goes on in the Central Section. And I put it up against anybody in the state of California. Our athletes are just built different as well. We just have that blue-collar mentality. We get after it, and our Central Section championships in baseball and softball have been going on for the last few days. There are some tonight. We're going to be getting into that stuff in just a second. But if you missed any episodes, you can go to 1430ESPNFresno.com. All the great shows that we have on 1430 is right there behind the bench as well. Phil Bonatti's great show. We're going to be on the call tonight for the big Bullard and Liberty Bakersfield championship game. 6 o'clock. Maybe you guys think that the game starts at 7 or 7:30, but no, tonight is at 6 o'clock. We're going to be on air at 5:45 for our pregame. So huge matchup. We're definitely going to be breaking that game down as the show moves along. Actually, at 11 o'clock, make sure you guys still are listening to the show at that time. We also want to thank the foundation at FCOE and our annual Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating Weather Report. 68 degrees right now. High of, what are we looking at, 83? Yeah, high of 83 degrees. Great baseball weather. My goodness. Couldn't ask for better weather. Actually, Wednesday got a little windy, a little bit cold there down at in Visalia. People were wearing their sweatshirts for the championship game. So, yeah, lots of stuff to get into today. I do want to mention this. Last week, man, I had a rough go, and it didn't come across on air. I got lucky, but I got my very first case of food poisoning. And after experiencing what I experienced for, it was a solid 20 hours, I will never make fun of people that said they had food poisoning in the past. Again, it was my first time. I thought I was going to die. About 10 minutes before the show ended here, I started to get more of the aches and the shakes. I did spend a lot of time in the bathroom before the show started. Again, thankfully, I didn't have to, you know, take a break and run to the bathroom. But about 10 minutes left in the show, got the shakes, barely made it home. Started convulsing a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it was, I'm overplaying a little bit. I've never exaggerated in my life, though. But I did feel like I was going to die. It was horrible, horrible experience. So anyway, I recovered fairly quickly from that. But food poisoning, no joke. If you've had it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's literal poison, right, that your body is rejecting and coming out of different parts of your body. So that was my experience. So, yes, thankfully, I am okay from that. I will not name the restaurant that I received this food poisoning from. I don't want to out them, but it was nasty and disgusting. Baseball championships and softball going on. Margie Wright Diamond at Fresno State for softball. Valley Strong Ballpark, formerly Rawhide, in Visalia. I was able to go to Wednesday's Emmanuel and Menachi game, won by Emmanuel 16-7, sixth title in school history as far as baseball goes. And like I said, tonight we'll be broadcasting Bullard and Liberty. This reminds me of one of my favorite stories that I absolutely love to tell. There's a lot of people out there that know this story. I've told it before, I think 2 years ago. So 2015 was actually my second assignment to write for the Clovis Roundup about the baseball championship game. And it was between Clovis and Buchanan, and I needed a photographer that game. The year before, I did not have a photographer. I took one picture with my iPhone. It was a horrible picture, and they printed it. But I wanted a legit photographer for the game. So I got my good friend Brandon Pettit, who's a fellow teacher where I teach down south near Kingsburg, and he's got good equipment. I'm like, dude, you want to take some pictures, man? We'll try to get you full access and all that stuff and take some pictures. Got it, get it printed in the newspapers. Like, sure, let's do it. Then it was the whole idea, because he didn't have the CIF media pass, of like, how are we going to get you in? How are we going to get you access? Are we going to get you close to the field? All that. So he's like, you know what? Let me see what I could do. So he found this website and decided to print his own media pass. So again, this is 2015, right? It's a while ago. What is that? 11 years. That's wild. So he uploaded a picture. Okay. Professional looking picture, just a headshot. And he created this press pass. It said media in nice big blue letters. And it asked him all these things like, would you like a barcode? Sure, I guess. What the heck is a barcode good for on a press pass? But sure, put a barcode, make it look a little more official. Would you like an ID number? Yeah, sure. So he made up, I think it was a combination of his wife's birthday, his birthday, and the year they got married. Yeah, sure. So he printed it out, laminated it, put it on a lanyard. Boom, instant press pass built right off the internet. So we get to the game, and we're like, okay, let's see if this bad boy works. I had my pass, so no problem. And the person at the gate looked at his, said, yep, come on through, bud. So got through, kind of smiled at each other a little bit as we walked through, like, all right, this thing worked. We get down to the field and mingle around a little bit, find a spot. And then there was another worker down there from the minor league ballpark. And he was telling some of the other staff members, yeah, you guys only allow people with official credentials down here at this level. And then he pointed to Brandon and he goes, yeah, like this guy. Look at this. This is an official press pass right here. So look for something like this. And again, he's just busting up. We're having a good time with that. So that's one of our favorite stories. So anyway, hey, no offense to the people that work there. This was an official looking press pass, but printed off the internet. We always have a good laugh at that story. One of the reasons why I'm telling that again is 11 years later, Brandon's son, Lucas, is the starting catcher for Emmanuel in the championship game. So how cool is that, right? Just a full circle moment. Got to cover the game, take pictures, got to get in on that press pass, and then his son is the starting catcher. Not only starting catcher, but they win the championship. So cool stuff there. Congratulations to Sanger High School for a couple reasons. Double win this week. One is yesterday they won the school's first ever state title in anything in boys volleyball. At Fresno City College, I saw some videos. It's a great game. They beat St. Francis 3-1. Good stuff. Division II. Yeah, so congrats to the Sanger boys volleyball team for winning a state championship. And also, flew under the radar a little bit. I saw a couple of articles about this, but at a big meeting, the Apaches mascot was approved. And what do I mean by that? Well, there was a law signed, an assembly bill 3074 signed by Governor Gavin Newsom called the California Racial Mascots Act. It expands on the state ban on derogatory Native American terms for K-12 schools and their athletic mascots. This cycle was supposed to take place in July of 2026. So they had a big meeting, and it got approved because two tribes sent letters and representatives saying that it is an absolute honor for Sanger to be named the Apaches. It's a legacy thing, and they absolutely can use it. So because of that, Sanger gets to keep the Apache mascot. And we know what happened with Tulare and Chowchilla, how they had to change theirs. And I think Clark School, the junior high leaning in Clovis High, thought about that too. But they're going to be able to keep their chieftain's mascot. So, yeah, congratulations to Sanger. Get to keep the Apaches, man. Sanger would absolutely not be the same if they weren't the Apaches. My gosh. So, so congratulations to them on those two victories this week. All right, so what's coming up? Who's coming on the show? What are we going to be talking about? After the break, we're going to be talking with the Emmanuel first-year coach, Aaron Shackelford, coming on. He's only 3 years removed from playing AAA baseball for the Pirates organization. This dude could mash. Just look up his stats. Third all-time in NAIA home runs in history. Played for Masters College. The streak that the Eagles are on, man, took that championship game over the number one seed in Menachie, 16-7. So Coach Shackelford coming on the show. It'll be fun to get to know his story. And after that, another great story. Did you guys see that Avenel, the softball team, captured the D6 title with an 11-0 win over Minarets? We're going to hear from their coach, Julie Morales. Just another great story, man. We love these feel-good stories. And I did promise a deep dive into the Liberty and Bullard baseball game. Well, I got Mr. Bullard baseball, Jim Sandrini, coming on. He did a fantastic job on the broadcast. He had a three-man booth in Bullard's playoff win over Clovis North. Jimmy's coming on. We're going to be breaking down that game, man. This guy is well-prepared. He knows the history of Bullard probably better than anyone as far as baseball goes. Puts together the program, has the all-time records for Bullard hitters and pitchers, and their winning streaks and all that good stuff. So he's got a bunch of information. I know he talked to Coach Tom Donald, I believe yesterday, maybe the day before. So Jim's coming on. We're going to be breaking down that game. And then after that, I got another Central Section Championship coach. His name probably sounds familiar to a lot of people out there. Jesse Dara, the head coach at Minarets. They won the Valley title last night with an incredible 10-9 win. Last night, I followed the game on as much as I could on Twitter, and it was wild. It was Shafter, the number one seed. That's who they defeated. But that game was back and forth. Minarets had to hold them on. Shafter got a couple runs in the bottom of the seventh inning. So yeah, so fun to have Jesse on the show. He has never been on before. Did a fantastic job at Fresno Pacific University, one of their best all-time pitchers. So, so Jesse's coming on. That will be great. So that is who's coming on the show. All right, let me get through some of these scores as quick as possible. So Bakersfield Christian won D2, defeated Aurora Grande in a good game, 4-3. Aurora Grande was the 3 seed. And how about this last night? My gosh, this game did not start until around 8:15 last night. But the lowest seeded team so far to win a Central Section Championship in baseball softball, Central Valley Christian, the 9 seed, 10-run rolled Justin Garza, 12-2. Talk about on a roll. That's the Cavaliers. We all know about their win over Kingsburg in round 2. So first baseball title for Central Valley Christian. Coach Caleb Flores lost twice as a player and one as a coach. I mentioned the Emmanuel game, the Minarets game as well. Corcoran and Roosevelt play today. Another great story with Roosevelt. Corcoran, the defending D5 champs, but find themselves in the D6 championship game. That is going to be today at 1 o'clock. And as far as softball goes, the number one Clovis North, the two-time defending champs, are going to be facing number 3 Buchanan. That's at Margie Wright Diamond. That is tonight at 6 o'clock for D1. Redwood, the 3 seed, defeated number 1 Garces, 1-0 in 8 innings to capture D2. Chowchilla, And those girls are putting up tons of runs. The number one seed, they defeated Hanford West 11-6. Congratulations to them. Number three, South, and number four, Mission Prep, play today at 4:30. So I guess that North and Buchanan game is going to be at 7:30. It could be wrong. I need to double-check on that one. And Woodlake, I think they got a dynasty there. That is a three-peat for the Tigers in D5. They're all over Cal City, 11-0. Congrats to them. And then I mentioned the Avenel and Minarets game, 11-0. We're going to hear from their coach just before the top of hour number two. All right, we're going to take a break right now. I'm going to bring on Coach Aaron Shackelford and talk about Emmanuel's sixth Central Section baseball title in school history. You're listening to it all on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
To the town of our free.
All right, welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. So I got through the baseball and softball scores probably a little too quickly, but I did mention the Emmanuel game, the 16-7 win over number one Menachi. And as you guys know, I am a proud Emmanuel alum. It's where I played sports. I graduated in 1989. Had the privilege of coaching there as well for 6 years. Coached baseball, won a Valley Championship. That's what we called it back then. Three divisions back in 1995. My brother won one in 1993. He was a part of the very first one. So, yeah, Emmanuel High School's very close to my heart. Got a lot of good memories. Still a lot of very good people that work there and coach there. And now we're seeing, like, sons of the players that I coach. So it's kind of a surreal moment for me. But Emmanuel, you know, just went on an absolute heater, especially at the end of the year. A lot of things clicked. We have their first-year head coach, Aaron Shackelford, on the show right now. It was their sixth title, like I mentioned, that 16-7 win over number one Menachie. Kind enough to join us this morning. Thanks again for coming on, Aaron. It's been a few days. Has your mind settled a bit? Just kind of what's been the prevailing thought in your mind about Wednesday night's game?
Oh, man, well, just all a blessing. I mean, we made that a goal at the beginning of the year, and even though we had some major ups and downs, I think we kept that belief, and to see it come to fruition is pretty remarkable. I mean, I'm so thrilled. It's all a blessing from the Lord, obviously, all grace from Him. So we give Him all the glory. I commend my guys as well. They're super tough group of kids, so it's been fun the last couple of days. I mean, we live in a small town, so it makes it even more fun seeing people around town. Like, feels like you won the World Series, you know. So it is a really great accomplishment. Super excited about it.
And one of my favorite things about championship games, especially basketball and baseball, is seeing the kids run out from the dugout or from the bench and celebrate with one another and jump on each other. And you, first of all, you probably hope that they don't hurt each other because you still have some state playoff to games. But right when the game ended, did you hug your coaches, shake their hands? Did you hug a player, just kind of watch everything unfold? What were you doing while the kids were celebrating?
Yeah, I hugged Coach Spencer Long, who is right beside me, who's actually going to be a missionary. So this was his first year coaching, and now he's going off to be a missionary. So we were super excited, gave him a big hug, and just kind of blown away just how the Lord has blessed our season. And then watch the guys. It is really awesome to see young guys, like, win at a high level. I think it builds character far beyond baseball. So to see him overcome a mid-season slump and to ultimately get to the goal that we set out at the beginning of the year, it's really rewarding. So we were so excited. I gave all my coaches big hugs and then ran out, and it was cool.
And you run out to center field and get to celebrate with the parents there and take some pictures and cool stuff like that. That's always one of the fun parts about winning a championship. I want to go back, Coach, to before the game even started, before the first pitch was thrown. I watched your in and out from up close, and my gosh, I think that really set the tone. You guys You guys were really picking the ball, making good throws. And there's been a lot of talk, and we might get into this a little bit later in our conversation about playing on a minor league field and the adjustments that have to be made. But that field can be tough to play on for a couple different reasons. You know, again, it's still 60 feet, 6 inches, 90 feet, and all that stuff that makes a baseball field, and especially in the infield. But, man, that in and out was sharp. Do you think that really set the tone and the mentality for the game that you guys played?
Oh, for sure. I mean, even our coaches, we're like a little worried. We're like, that's by far the best in and out we've taken all year. I mean, maybe we should have made some mistakes. So, but I mean, we looked so good. I think what we were trying to emphasize in the playoffs is we expect to be here. We're not going to go steal out games. We want to be aggressive and unintimidated, fearless. I mean, we really have nothing to fear. We trust that the Creator has all things in control, and so we can play with, like, the utmost anxiety-free baseball. So I felt like our guys, that was the tone setter in pregame, which was super fun to watch.
As the kids say, we were locked in, right? I hear that
yeah,
phrase a lot. Let's get into the game a little bit. What, you know, lots of things to go over again. Lots of runs, lots of walks, let's be honest. Is there one key play that sticks out to you that was like, man, this is definitely tilting in our favor?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things that stick out. We get two quick outs in the first inning, and my two youngest kids on the team, we go walk, or maybe a hit, walk or hit from Jax. Ball in dirt, Reed gets to second, and Seth Thomas, freshman, you would never know that he, I mean, you would never think he experiences any pressure internally. He just gets up and laces a base hit, and we score. I think that was a huge tone setter to start the game. I think I was telling the guys this yesterday at practice, we go up 6-0. They put 4 on us, and the base is loaded with no out. And we strike a guy out. We backpick a guy at first. Ground ball the second inning over, and you almost felt like, after that inning, the momentum was still in our favor, even though they put up 4 runs, you know. Like, they put up 4 runs. We left the field of defense and were in control still. So I thought that was a huge gut punch for them. And then we went up and scored 9 after they put up 4. So it was really awesome. I felt like a really dominant performance from our guys, which was fun. And it started in that 4th inning when they put up 4, and then we came back and got 9.
Yeah, put up that 9 spot. That was such a huge response. I do want to go back to that back pick play. So after you got the strikeout, your first baseman, and I was actually down the line watching the game, your first baseman didn't, you know, tip his hand or anything. He'd been playing back. Kind of what was the call from the dugout on that? And talk about the trust factor, man, because if your pitcher turns and your first baseman doesn't get the call, man, that, if he sails that thing in the right field, that could be a disaster. But talk about what you guys saw and the communication on the field to make it happen.
Yeah, we practice that play a lot. We have a bunch of verbal pick plays that we call from the dugout. And we actually executed that one in the quarterfinal round against Wasco. That was a huge turning point in the game, too. Same situation, bases loaded, Wasco's rallying. We call that, we get a quick out, strike out, and then get out of the inning. And it's just something we practice. I think especially high school base runners get a little bit lazy at first with the bases loaded. So those are like the ultimate proud moments as a coach when you're practicing those situations in practice, saying this is going to be a hinge point play in a big game and we need to be able to execute when it matters most. And then you get the situation presented to yourself and we execute. It's like the most rewarding thing. And obviously there was a huge momentum shift for us and a huge gut punch for them. So we practiced it, we executed it, and it is a risky situation. Like, I can't watch. I'm like, all right, we put it into play, and I'm like, I'm not watching. If he throws it in the right field, we look like the biggest fools ever. But, I mean, it's just another testament to our guys and their attention to detail, executing on the highest stage they've probably each ever played on in a really important moment. So that was awesome.
We're talking with Aaron Shackelfield, the head coach at Emmanuel High School. I want to talk about a couple guys that you just mentioned. The hitting display from a freshman and sophomore, Seth Thomas, hits that oppo single that you mentioned in the first, and then two triples, man. He just absolutely deposited into the over center fielder's head, right center. And then Jax Davidson, a sophomore, got five hits in the game. What impressed you the most about those guys' performances?
Yeah, I mean, I said it a couple times, but just the fearlessness of it. I think growing up for me as a kid, I always would put myself in those situations in the batting cage, like a championship game on the line, two outs, runner on third, you know. And so when I would get in those situations, there was like a pressure that I felt, at least as a player, and it seems like they don't have that. So their ability to execute under pressure, I mean, considering Seth, who's a freshman, I mean, Jax is a young sophomore too. Those guys, like, they don't even realize the situation they're in. They just perform as if they're on a backfield somewhere and no one's watching, which is what you want. I mean, you want guys to, like you said, block out. I mean, we're on a baseball field. It's 90 feet to first. There's a left field foul pole, right? You know, it's the same rules. We just need to go play. You know, nothing changes. And their mental strength and ability to overcome the pressure and just perform, that's what makes players great. Like, the ability to accept pressure, accept the possibility of failure, and execute. I think that's what makes good players great, because any, you know, there's thousands of kids that can take good BP and hit in a regular season game, but it takes a great player to perform at the highest pressure situations, and they did that. And they've been consistent all year in that. That's what I'm so proud of them, is like, they didn't treat this game differently. You know, they came into it with the same confidence, same composure as they have against a midseason game on Saturday. So thankful for that.
And both those kids' dads were stud football players as well, so the mentality is there. I have to mention this, but the freshman, Seth Thomas, the dude is about 5'9", 175 pounds. He benches, and this is confirmed, 385 pounds. You ever seen a freshman at that height and weight be able to bench 385?
No, I mean, even like you get some of the Samoan guys at our school who weigh 290 are barely touching that, and they're seniors. And we're talking about a freshman who weighs 180. I mean, he is a freak. And I was looking up at the beginning of the fall when I first got here, California state record for 14-year-old bench press. He's right up there. I mean, I don't know how verifiable that information is, but, I mean, per capita, I think he is pound for pound the strongest freshman in the country. I mean, he's the strongest guy at our school as a freshman. And we're talking about a football team that went 13-0 and won the Valley Championship. Like, he's competing with no slouches, and he's the strongest kid out there, and that's why he's so good. I try and tell our guys, strength is a huge deal in high school sports. Like, the strongest guys win, and he is the strongest guy, and it's proven to help him immensely.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I can't wait to watch him for the next 3 years on football. He's a running back too. So yeah, a lot of good stuff happening at Emmanuel High School. We mentioned this at the beginning, Aaron, about the ups and downs of a high school season. You guys started off really well. Won a bunch of games at the beginning of the season, ran into a little bit of a lull there. You guys played some really tough competition, and obviously the streak that you went through at the end of the year on your way to a Central Section championship. What did you learn personally about coaching high school players kind of during that rough time?
Yeah, I think if I could do something different, I think I'd get pretty harsh. And I think, you know, just accepting the fact that they're going to fail. And even though the competition may seem, you know, not as challenging to me, like they're in high school and I need to be more encouraging. So just trying to be, I mean, that was kind of the script that flipped towards the end of that losing streak, as the coaching staff was like, we need to just go in there and be encouraging to these guys and try and get back on track. We talk about getting through the cusp of failure, and that's why baseball is so rewarding, is because it's high-level failure. When you succeed, it feels like a real reward. And so I think I would be more encouraging in the midst of failure rather than just kind of getting on them a little too strong. But I think what I learned is that our guys are tough. Our guys are really tough. We never really lost faith. We broke every huddle with Valley on three, even in the midst of our struggles. So baseball's that way. I mean, we have a coaching staff that played. Everyone played, at least in college, and have experienced high-level failure. And so there was never like, we're never going to get out of this. It was obviously frustrating, but the coaching staff all believed that we could, you know, this is normal, and I think that helped a little bit. So we learned a lot. I mean, I learned a lot as a coach. Need to be encouraging in the midst of failure. Obviously, there needs to be correction where necessary, but we learned a lot.
We only got a couple minutes with you, Coach, but I do have to ask you again. You played for the Pittsburgh Pirates at a high level as well. Not that removed, man, from playing pro baseball. You hit a bunch of bombs back in the day. It wasn't that long ago though. But just kind of what are some fun stories that you can share about playing pro baseball and some of the guys that you ran into?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely loved my time in pro ball. I really have very few negative memories. Even my experience with the Pirates organization, they were amazing. A lot of the guys that are currently playing in the big leagues I got to play with, and can't say enough good things about guys like Nick Gonzalez and Derek Briolo, guys who I still talk to, I mean, once a week, once or twice a week. I mean, playing is awesome. I could have played in the minor leagues for the next 15 years and been content. You know, I love being in a clubhouse with guys, especially as a Christian, to be able to impact guys that way in a culture that's very self-focused in minor league baseball. Guys want to, and not that it's bad to want to aspire to be great, but it becomes very selfish. And to be able to be, you know, just a light in that environment was very life-giving to me. And I love to be able to do that now as a coach in high school. It's super rewarding. But, yeah, I loved my time with the Pirates.
All right, I got to ask you, though, who'd you take deep? Any names we recognize? Any guys that are on the hill right now in Major League Baseball that you got?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of – a lot of the Cleveland staff, we face them, I mean, more than anybody. Most of their starters, like, taking yard, Gavin Williams and Beebe, those guys, McKenzie, what's that guy's name?
Tristan.
Yeah, Tristan.
Tristan McKenzie.
Twice in one game. I mean, yeah, a lot of my homers in double and triple A, most of those guys are in the big leagues now. And I'm like, oh man, feel like I could still hit big league pitching. You know, it's just all about timing, you know, where when you get called up, especially in my position as a 14th rounder, the timing just never aligned. And I think that is, I know that is the sovereignty of God in my life, you know. He didn't want me to be a big leaguer, and I'm totally content with that. Obviously, I miss playing a lot, but what I do now is such a joy. So, yeah, I kick a lot of guys' yard. Not to be arrogant about it, but yeah.
Well, and then, all right, we got to wrap this up, but one of the fun parts about high school sports is Central Valley Christian wins a D3 championship. Emmanuel wins a D4 championship. Stephen Vogt, you know, is a CBC grad and is the manager of the Cleveland Guardians right now, who you just mentioned. So, man, got to love baseball, got to love connections and athletes. But, hey, Aaron, great to meet you the other day. Thanks for jumping on. Congrats, man. Add another one to the list of baseball championships. So, again, hope you're doing – hope you're have a great rest of the weekend. And again, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, bro. Really appreciate it.
All right. Aaron Shackelford, head coach of Emmanuel. Good stuff, man. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to bring on Avenel softball coach Julie Morales. They won a Central Section championship. Great story there. We're going to take a small break and then come back on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN, and we all love great stories. We all love the way that sports brings people together, brings communities together as well. And when I saw this softball matchup for the D6 championship game between Minarets and Avenel, the 3C, I'm like, man, good job for Avenel making it to the championship game. And they went ahead and went one step further. They won the whole darn thing. And we have their head coach on the show right now, Julie Morales. They defeated Minarets 11-0, a shutout win. So first of all, Coach, thanks for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
Thank you so much for having us and the recognition. I'm still on cloud nine this morning.
I bet. So has it quite sunk in what your team was able to accomplish? Like what are your feelings right now still?
Disbelief, the recognition, you know, the send-off for my girls. We're such a small town. Everybody knows everybody. I've lived in Avenel all my life. I've watched these girls grow up. You almost forget that you just made history. You know, Avenel won its first CIF title in softball history. And, you know, it's still sinking in, like my girls pulled through.
I want to go back to even before you guys played and traveling to Fresno. You talked about the send-off a little bit and then playing at Fresno State's home field. What was the sentiment with the girls? How did you guys feel? You're like, man, we're going to Fresno to play for a championship game. What was the general feeling of the team before the game?
Before the game, my pep talk to the girls was, stay hungry. Stay hungry, and nobody wants this more than you girls. This 2 years ago, the girls went to the championship. Unfortunately, they fell short from Nipomo, so they took second place. So the girls that had returned in 2024, they came home with that chip on their shoulder, like, you know, man, we could have done it. We were there. We had it all. And not every athlete gets a second chance. And last season, in 2025, we did fairly well. We had the highest winning record, even better than the year before. We had to be bumped up to Division Five. And this year, I told the girls, stay hungry, stay focused, work together as a team. So the pep talk was, they already knew. The send-off, we had California Highway Patrol, we had Avenel PD, we had Kings County Sheriff, we had Kings County Fire Department. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Avenel, but we're kind of like in a crater hole. So you have to drive about 5 miles through hills.
Yeah.
And we just thought the send-off was going to be through our main road. No, the emergency crew just took us through the hills, so everybody had to step aside and see us going through the hills. And I know that was so special for the girls. You know, for emergency services, you have to pull over. So everybody was like, what's going on? And then there's two white vans right in the middle of the line. And, you know, it was neat. And I got to see California Highway Patrol. Everybody, Kings County, post on their social media pages, our escort out. So the send-off was just great. We had a little red carpet celebration at the high school, and then emergency services escorted us out. So my girls knew that they were important. My girls knew.
And they absolutely performed on the field as well, scoring 11 runs. Were you guys even surprised about the performance on the field? You're like, my gosh, everything is rolling, especially offensively?
My girls on Thursday night played to their full potential. Full potential. Our pitcher, Chloe Nieto, outstanding. That, to me, all season long, that was her best game by far. Emma Morales put us on the board, you know, with that double in the first inning, 3-0. Went back up, got us another run in. Layla Lopez, she's our cleanup batter. That kid just comes in clutch. Alina Sanchez, she is our leadoff. She's a freshman. That kid will get herself on base so you can hit her in. I mean, my girls just played to their full potential.
I do want to ask you about the inside the park home run that I saw on the news. A fly ball kind of hit over the right fielder's head. And one of your players absolutely just scooted around, and the joy that she had while crossing home plate and the dugout. Just kind of explain who that was and what that play meant for you guys.
For sure. She was popping out all game, and when she was on deck, her name is Natalia Ruiz, number 18. When she was on deck, I make my girls take a deep breath when I see they're nervous. I make them look at me, and I take a deep breath, and they do it. So she was just down on herself because she knows what she's capable of. And I told her, not the deep breath. Go in that box. You go hunting. You find your ball and drive it. Sure enough, she just saw it was a little bit low. It was a lower pitch, and she just took it. And I'm going to tell you right now, Natalia is a jackrabbit when she runs bases. That girl, she's lightning speed. I mean, when she gets going, there's no stopping her. She's the fastest runner on the team. So when she hit that hole and it passed the right fielder, I was like, this kid's coming home. So it was just, my girls just connected as a team, and they played their hearts out because they had the second chance.
Coach, we only got a couple more minutes, but I definitely want to ask you about what the championship means to the community. You mentioned the small town, and I have been there. I actually played basketball in the gym back in the late 80s, so I have been to Avenel. But what does the softball title mean to the community and the school of Avenel?
Just my girls made history, and Avenel is on the map. We have 12 girls on our squad, and so much potential. Just speaking of Natalia, she will be playing for West Hills College this coming season. It's so supportive. Everybody's so proud and recognizing the girls. We plan on having a parade. It's just amazing. It's amazing to put Avenel on the map and put that CIF championship logo on our field.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm sure you guys are already thinking about the rings and that great parade that you have and all the celebration. And again, you got to go to school on Friday and be with – and all the kids got to talk about the game with their fellow classmates and the rest of the school. So I'm sure that was a great moment for them as well.
For sure. The girls are just sunbathing, soaking it all up.
That is awesome. Again, thanks for coming on, Julie. I really appreciate you. Just a fantastic story. You know, again, the highlights that I saw on the news were great, and the celebration. So congrats again for all the hard work. And, you know, you said you've known the girls since they were young, and to see everything come together and win a championship. I think the Central Section as a whole can definitely appreciate what you guys have accomplished. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the recognition and your time. It's truly appreciated. I hope you have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. And you still got some more softball to play as well. You bet. That was Julie Morales, head softball coach at Avenel. We're going to take a break in just a second. We're going to be talking about that big game tonight. Yeah, maybe you guys have heard of it, right? Bullard and Liberty of Bakersfield down there in Visalia. We're going to be broadcasting the game at 6 o'clock is scheduled for the first pitch. Pregame at 5:45. Phil Benatti and I in the call right now. Sitting down, man. He's excited. We're going to get him on in just a few minutes. Jim Sandrini, Mr. Bullard Baseball, as I like to call him, is going to be coming on, breaking down the game. He's got some stats. He's talked to coaches. He is well prepared. My goodness, he's throwing papers at me already. So, Jimmy, look forward to talking to you in just a second. We're going to take a break and bring on Jimmy in just a second here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
From Clovis to Kingsburg, from Fresno to Bakersfield, and everything in between, we've got you covered. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, your number one source for high school highlights, riveting talk, and hometown heroes. And here is your host, Paul Metters.
Welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN, your local sports leader. And those conversations were really good. Love talking to head coaches, especially after when they win a Central Section title. The joy, the exuberance coming off of that high of the celebration. Like the Emmanuel coach, Aaron Shackelford, Julie Morales, a head coach, of Emmanuel, head coach at Avenel softball. You know what, to me, let's be honest, right? A Central Section championship means so much. Not only to the players, but to the communities as well, to the parents that, you know, spent many weekends driving their kids to camps and, you know, showcases and all these different things. So it's definitely a community effort when you not only get to a Central Section championship, but win it. So lots of good stories out there, crowning 6 in softball, 6 in baseball. We have a big one tonight with Division I. Bullard, the 2 seed, facing Liberty of Bakersfield, the 4 seed. Don't forget that. They are the 4 seed. And here to talk about that, man, I wanted no other person to talk about this game and break this down. Jim Sandrini, coming in hot, man. You got a binder here. You have papers spread all over the table here at First String Sports. Did you even buy a visor? Or did you hear First String Sports?
Yeah, no, I bought that for my granddaughter, who's she's only 6 years old, right? Or no, excuse me, she's 7 going on 8, but she's gone to Jamie Maxey's camps, and she's starting to play softball, so I promised her a visor. I got my grandson. Tommy gave me a hat for him for his upcoming camp, so my granddaughter looked me in the eyes and kind of
went,
hey, what about my quiero's? So, yeah, it was. So I get to go straight from here and give her visor. So it's going to be cool.
Yeah, we're going to be breaking down tons of stuff about the game, talk about Bullard's legacy as well. So your schedule today, right? When you woke up this morning, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Like what were some of the first things on your mind? And obviously you're going to be joining us on the broadcast as well. But what were you thinking this morning when you woke up and maybe got your coffee and then found your way here to First String Sports the rest of the day?
Yeah, you know, this is like me getting to be a kid all over again. I mean, to be able to hang out, you know, all the coaches of Bullard have always let me hang around the field. And, of course, I do a lot of maintenance there. I've been mowing it for 26 years. So they kind of let me hang around, and I'm, you know, kind of like the old Dutch uncle that, you know, gets to talk to the kids. And, you know, the kids are extremely appreciative. I mean, I had a parent ask me one time, Paul, why do you do this, Jim? Why do you do this? I said, I do it because there's not a time that I walk on that field that I don't have the majority of the team come up and either thank me or ask me how I'm doing. And that goes back all the way back to Todd Johnson days when my son played there, had the opportunity to play there and start 2 years. So it is fulfilling. But getting up this morning, I mean, I was excited. I mean, I knew I had this show. I'm excited to always be able to be on the radio with you, and especially tonight with you and Phil. And then I'm planning, you know, I got to go pick up Coach Noakes at 3 o'clock and drive him down. He didn't want to go down at 1:30, so Noakes says, can I go with you? And then I've got to go straight to El Diamante High School and interview Tony Mills about his kids, you know, because I want to give them equal time. I don't want people on the radio to think, oh, God, they got another Bullard homer talking on the radio, because I do know a little bit about the other teams too. So, yeah, this is an exciting day for me. I mean, the last section championship for him was 2012. You know, the kids are excited. The kids, and I stopped by yesterday and interviewed Coach Donald to ask him his insight on his starting lineup. And we'll talk about that maybe today, or we'll talk about it during the game tonight. But the kids are genuinely excited. I mean, this is something that they're ready to go. I had to pull out my old 2012 section championship ring, and I let them know this is what you guys are playing for. And I got a lot of oohs and ahs. I showed it Wyatt Rosenthal, and he goes, don't show me that. Don't show me that, Mr. Sandrini. He goes, I don't want to see that right now. So, you know, he didn't want to be jinxed or anything like that. But the kids are excited to play, and I am positive that Tony's kids are excited to play too.
You mentioned Bakersfield and knowing that area well. I didn't know this about you, but you're a Bakersfield guy.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Went down to East Bakersfield when you graduated from there, right?
Well, I actually West Bakersfield High School.
West.
Yeah,
okay.
West Bakersfield High School. I was there when they had East, North, and South, of course. When West Bakersfield opened up, my oldest brother, Mike, was in the first graduating class. I was in the fifth graduating class. So we got into that as at that time, the growth of what the area was. And, you know, we kind of struggled a little bit athletically, as all new schools do, because, you know, you go into different areas and you pull. The area they pulled the most from, Paul, like when they redistrict and Clovis West opened up and they took a lot of Bullard kids back in the day, was South Bakersfield High School. And one of my dearest friends, who lived only 2 miles from West Bakersfield High School, but he was one of their best football and baseball players, a kid named Mark Hance, who yep. later came here to Fresno State and is in their Baseball Hall of Fame and played in the Dodger organization, then was a head coach at South Bakersfield High School. And when Don Ward went over to Stockdale and became the athletic director, pulled Mark over there to be the football coach. And it really opened up a door for me when Thorny was a coach, Chad Thornhill was a coach at Bullard High School, to be able to call up Mark and Don and say, hey, can we have a little bit of intersection rivalry here rather than us just playing always Fresno schools, Clovis schools? I said, why don't we start integrating the Bakersfield schools? And we started a home and away with them preseason. It started out preseason, wasn't a league game. But we went down there the first time, and they threw up a great barbecue for us. So when we left and came back, we had to match that. And we did that until all of a sudden it became a regular season game. And then my roommate at Fresno State was Randy Roberts, who was the head coach at Centennial High School. So he calls me up and he goes, hey, I need to get in touch with Thornhill. We need to put you on our schedule right now. So it was kind of a time for me, being from Bakersfield, feeling comfortable, knowing Mark, who was my first roommate here at Fresno State as the athletic director, Randy, who was the head coach at Centennial, him being my roommate after Mark. Yeah, he didn't graduate. He got drafted by the Dodgers. But it opened the door for me. It opened the door for me to get to know Tony and a lot of the coaches down there. So, and then all of a sudden, everybody's playing Bakersfield schools. So, yeah, good
stuff. You are just the absolute great connector. Right? We didn't name a stretch of the Highway 99, Freeway 99 of the Jim Sandrini Breezeway. I don't know what we could call it. But, yeah. Let's talk about the game tonight.
Yeah.
This Bullard team, and we mentioned a little off air, they are the 2 seed. Liberty is the 4 seed. It's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. Bullard does. A lot of people are thinking this Liberty team has the advantage, but this Bullard team's different. At the beginning of the year, though, knowing the team that was coming back, if I would have told you that they were in the championship game back then, you would have said what?
Wow. And once again, it's nothing against the kids there. But you look at, and Paul, you and I have talked about this, and Phil, on air, off air, but they didn't have a, and I call them dudes, they didn't have a dude-laden lineup. I mean, they didn't have a lineup like they did when Beckett Zvorak was there, where they start with Trevor Wilson, then they went to Beckett, then they went to Jace Porter, and then they had Brent Munger there. I mean, they had their first six kids in the lineup are all playing at D1 schools right now. So that's what I call a dude lineup. These guys are just blue-collar workers. I mean, they go out to practice every day. They work hard. When they cross the chalk and it's game time, every kid that gets off that field at the end of the game, their uniforms are dirty. They're just old-school Bullard baseball players.
The MO of this team is what? I watched them, obviously, a lot more lately than the beginning of the year. But, like, what does this team do really, really well?
I think what they do well is the camaraderie of the team. They believe in each other, next man up. I mean, they're always I went to numerous games. I was ill at the first part of the season. I had to redo some knee surgery, so I missed probably the first 12 games. And I would vicariously follow them through phone calls with Coach Noakes. But I think the thing that they do the best is the next man up philosophy. They all believe in each other. I saw multiple games this year where they were down in the fifth and sixth inning. One of the classic games was that first the second game, the first game at Mike Noakes Field against San Joaquin Memorial, where they battled back and forth lead changes, and all of a sudden they've got a 5-3 lead, and they give up the lead in the top of the seventh. And lo and behold, these kids just believed. When they crossed the chalk to come up to bat, they just battled. They got two outs, and with two outs, they put a sophomore up, Zach Jasmazian, who doubles down the line, and Bullard wins that game. And that was the epitome of what the heart and soul of this Bullard team is. They just don't know when to quit. Great team camaraderie. I think if you were to talk to all these kids, they really – I don't like the word like. I used to say this to my staff when I was working at Lennar. Hey, I don't like any of you. I love all of you. And there's a big difference, and these kids have love for the game, and they love to go out and get dirty and just play hardball.
And I'm glad you mentioned that about, you know, they necessarily don't have a dude. And you mentioned some of the teams in the past. Well, let's look at it this way: 112-29-1 the last 5 years. That's a lot of wins.
Ton of wins.
And right here they are in the Central Section Championship game playing tonight. You mentioned the camaraderie. You know, Wyatt Rosenthal, who was on the show last week, he's a gamer. And, you know, if we go back a couple years ago, you know, that play that he made against Clovis West,
yes,
that he had to shake off. I didn't mention it on the show last week. I was curious if he was going to bring that up. But, you know, they had a chance to go to a title game, and it didn't go their way. But the kid just has a different type of mentality, right? You've watched him for a long time.
Yeah, Wyatt's just such a, you know, great kid. I remember that game. I mean, I can still see it, sitting in the stands at Clovis West, and ground ball was hit to Wyatt, and he wasn't catching at that time because, you know, Jake Porter was that catcher. And I think I said JC, that's his mom, and I apologize, Jake, if you're listening. But that ball was hit to him. I got up, and I was walking down over towards the right field line to congratulate him and say, hey, we're going to the finals. We've got a fresh Keenan Gomez to pitch in that game. Let's go. And you know, Wyatt, unfortunately, was a sophomore, and he airmailed the ball over the first baseman's head, and those two runs scored. He was devastated after the game. And I put my arm around him, and I said, hey, you're going to have another chance. The chance is going to come, and you won't know when it is, but that chance is going to come. And when it comes, just be all that you can be. And it came against Redwood when he had to go in relief, and he hadn't pitched four innings, and he pitched four shutdown innings against Redwood. He was a little wild in the top of the fourth, and he gave up a couple runs. But when he settled in the fifth, sixth, and seventh, he owned that lineup.
He did. And he talked about the mentality. I'm going one more. I'm finishing this game. You're not taking
me
out, Coach.
Definitely so.
Who are some other guys that you want to highlight for Buller that's really come on strong? We didn't mention the two playoff wins against Clovis North, and then Redwood, man, they just put bat to ball and took care of that pitcher that's headed to Miami, and right, just great execution plate wise from Buller and those teams. But who are some of the kids that have really, right, risen to the top lately?
Well, I I think the one kid, and you know why it's been great, but I think the one kid that has just exceeded everybody's expectations, and maybe not Coach Donald's, but is Jason Bain, the leadoff hitter. And in talking with Coach Donald yesterday, he said Jason is not a prototypical leadoff hitter. If you were to write a synopsis on what is a prototypical leadoff hitter, he's going to take pitches. He's going to try and let the guys on the on-deck circle, in the hole, in the dugout, see that pitcher, see what he's got, see if he's throwing a good crisp fastball, breaking curveball. Jason has been given the green light. If the first pitch is over the plate, get it. He's 7-for-7 in the playoffs with a walk. They've yet to get him out. Out of those 7 hits, I went back and charted, 5 of them are on first pitch. First pitch. So he's not your prototypical leadoff hitter, but he puts the ball in play, and he's got good speed, and he's just had an incredible, incredible 2-game playoff. Lucas Johnson, their shortstop, is getting healthy. He's had, so far right now, he is 4-for-8. Wyatt's had a great one. There's just kids that are doing layman work right now. I call them a blue-collar team. I'll always call them a blue-collar team because they come to work every day with the attitude that, hey, we got to get better. Who we playing? Oh, we're playing Clovis North. Oh, nobody expects us to win. Well, when the game was over, it was 9-1, and I'm sure I'll have a chance to talk to Jeff Prieto about it one day in the offseason. And then they have to face McElroy, who's going to Miami, and he had shut down a good Clovis team. And he beat Logan George. I mean, they beat him 6-1 and chased him. So everybody's thinking, oh, well, this kid's going to dominate Bullard. And after 3 innings, it's 6-0. And Bullard had 11 hits in 3 innings off a kid that's going to go to Miami. So,
and I don't think any swings and misses the first 2 innings.
No, that's not at all.
A foul thing or putting the ball in play.
Yeah, McElroy settled down a little bit, and he had a couple strikeouts. And this is nothing to get – I mean, that kid's going to be good. I mean, he's just a junior this year. He's going to be one of the better pitchers in the section year, like Davis Wilson is for North. You know, those might be your 2 headliners with Hirschkorn and George leaving. So, yeah, I mean, those are going to be two definitely headlining guys. But, yeah, Bullard just looks like who's out there. Let's go, you know, let's go.
And their shortstop, I've been impressed. He's made some really good plays up the middle.
Yeah.
We saw the second baseman make a couple of great plays in the playoffs as well. Defensively, up the middle, they're really strong as well.
Yeah, you know, they've Lucas Johnson at shortstop was hurt earlier in the year. He was battling some leg problems, and I'm sure if Lucas is listening to the show or Coach Donald or any of the Bullard family or, you know, Lucas's mom and dad, I mean, he struggled a little bit. I mean, as a sophomore, he was nominated for the All-State sophomore team. He had a great season. And this year, he was hurt, but he's healthy now. He's playing better. You saw him at his best, you know. Early in the season, he did have a few errors. Drew France, here's the great thing about Drew France at second base that a lot of people don't realize. He was their starter, Paul, and they benched him about 3 weeks left in the season. And Drew's the type of kid, he's a senior, and Tom said he showed his character. And by that, Tom said he rooted for the kid on the field, was the first out of the dugout to greet the kid coming off the field if he made a good play. He never got his head down, and his mentality was, I'm going to win my starting job back. And he did. And the couple plays he made against North were rally killers that could have put North right in the middle of that game, but he was strong. And then you've got a sophomore in center field that's, you know, played real well. And Coach said at the start of the season, and we're talking about Zach Jizmejian, he didn't know if Zach would be on the varsity roster. But lo and behold, he just performed. Tom brought up something yesterday that probably nobody on this call really knows unless you followed the Bullard Junior Varsity last year. There's a core of kids on this team that were 27-1 last year that played on that Junior Varsity team, and they're just waiting. They're waiting to get a chance to play baseball for Bullard High School next year.
Let's get into Liberty a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and anybody that follows high school baseball, maybe even in the state, even nationally as well, put up some pretty stupid, silly numbers. Just go over some of their dudes and some of the numbers that they put up and how you see that lineup shaking out.
Yeah, well, I got on and checked, and their lineup has been pretty solid throughout the playoffs. I mean, it's. I'm sure when I talk to Tony today and he talks about his kids, I mean, they're going to start with a sophomore leading off named Brogan Witcher. And if you haven't heard that name in the section, he is the first – he's a sophomore, but he's the first kid in the Central section to reclassify. So for those of you who might not know what that means, he's got so many offers, he's going to be a senior next year. So he's reclassifying himself up a year. He's their leadoff hitter, and he's batting way over 400. He's got 14 home runs, 40-plus RBIs. I mean, just – a stellar catcher. You're probably going to see two of the best catchers in the section go up against each other tomorrow night. But the difference maker, and in talking to Justin Roberts, who's the head coach at Stockdale High School, he says the difference maker in this lineup was when Gavin Williams, the transfer from Garfs, just got eligible, and they put him in the two holes. So they've got to either pitch to Brogan now. They can't walk him, because if they walk him, here's a kid in 17 games who had 33 RBIs. That may not sound like a lot of RBIs, but we're not talking about a 100-game season here. We're talking about a 30-game season. He had 33 RBIs and 12 home runs in 17 games. I have never seen stats like that.
12 home runs in 17 games.
In 17 games. I've never seen stats like that in my entire life. So you put those two guys up there, and it's – I mean, it's tough. And then they're good after that. They've got – Truman batting third, Gerke, who will probably pitch tonight, Cash Gerke, the cleanup hitter. Pierce Bucky is a freshman and the son of Jeff Bucky, who was a pretty good athlete, Bakersfield High School, on to Stanford pro football. He is batting in the five hole. He's got 14 home runs. If you talk about, well, God, how do they hit all these home runs, right? I mean, where are they playing? Well, a lot of people say if they're playing at Bullard, this is one of the biggest baseball stadiums in all of high school, along with Clovis High School, would they have the 61 home runs? Something tells me they may not have 61, but they may have 50 or 44 or something, or 45 or something like that, because these kids can power the ball. Years past, Liberty came into Bullard, and they brought a kid named Cutter Coffee that's in the Boston organization right now. He made our park look small.
He hit
two home runs and killed us. But this is a solid lineup. I think the one thing that Justin Roberts told me last night, and if that last name rings a bell, his dad was Randy Roberts, who was the head coach at Centennial High School for years. Randy and I were roommates at Fresno State, so I got to see Justin grow up. He's a good baseball guy. When you talk baseball with him, it's great, Paul, because he'll give you the facts and the data. And he said, you can't let the bottom third of the Liberty lineup beat you. And I said, explain that to me, Justin. He goes, those guys got to get up to bat back in the dugout. Because if they get on base and you flip the lineup, you start with Witcher, followed by Williams. And that's why one's got 40-plus RBIs, and the other one in 17 games has 33 RBIs. So, it's a super talented lineup. Tony's a great coach, you know. This is going to be a game, and it's going to be another game where we talk about the Bullard-Clovis-North game, and no one except the Bullard kids believe they can really win that game. I mean, everybody thought North had a more talented lineup, and probably maybe man for man, maybe they did. And then with McAree pitching for Redwood, everybody thought, well, this kid's going to dominate him, like they dominated Clovis. People forgot to tell the Bullard lineup that. And they just went out, and you were there for the North game, and then Phil and I did the Redwood game. But I kept tapping Phil on his arm. He probably got tired of it going, well, I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
So the matchups, we only got a couple minutes here, Jim. On one hand, you got the Thunder.
Yeah. Right?
On the other hand, for Liberty. On the other hand, you just have the camaraderie, the team that knows how to play winning baseball in Bullard. How do you see the game shaping up? Again, I like how you mentioned you got to get those bottom guys out for Liberty if you're Bullard. You know, but on the flip side, right? If you're Liberty, and I'm going to talk to Tony a little bit later,
you got to be scared of that Bullard lineup as well, because those guys just do all the little things that make things difficult. They put pressure on the defense.
Absolutely.
The style of baseball that Liberty, I know they played at the beginning of the year, first game of the year, but the style of baseball that's going to be different. And the ballpark plays different as well, so there's different factors going on.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, you're going to see the same thing. What wins championships? Okay, so it all starts, and I don't care what sport it is, be it football, be it basketball, I mean, good defense. So the first team that blinks, and I always say that, first team that makes an error, and there's a little bit more pressure put on. I think the first inning is going to be critical for both teams. I mean, you have leading off Brogan Whicher, who in three playoff games, has the teams he's faced, St. Joseph, Buchanan, and Clovis West, be it a hit, walk, or hit by pitch, he's only been out twice. So he's 6-for-8. He's been walked 4 times, and he's been hit by pitches twice. So here's a kid who leads off that sets their table, right, and has pop, 14 home runs and 40-plus RBIs. You got to get him out because you want the bases empty. If Williams hits a home run, it's just a one-run home run, you know. And the same thing, Tony's got it. Tony knows what's going on. He's had people watching Bullard play. You got to get Justin Bain out because he's been the table setter. And then after Justin comes Lucas Johnson, who's batting 500 in the playoffs, and you've got White Rosenthal after that, who's really considered the dude. I mean, the thing about Wyatt that's so great is he's a little bit like Brogan too. I'll kind of segue off here. He's their closer. Brogan's Liberty's closer. So, you know, where does the bridge come in there? But I think the first inning is going to be so critical. Bullard has to get out and get out of the first inning. And I'm sure Tony's thinking the same thing with as hot as those first three hitters for what Bullard High School's been.
Well, we'll find out tonight.
Absolutely.
Right? We could study these stats and make predictions and all this stuff, but the kids still have to play the game. And we're excited about this one tonight. It's going to be fun. There's going to be a ton of people driving on 99 from both directions to meet in Visalia. So, hey, great stuff as always, man. You are just a wealth of knowledge. We didn't even get to the history of Bullard baseball. So maybe next time you come on the show, and maybe tonight we'll dive into a little bit more. But, hey, thanks for coming on. It's going to be a great day, and appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, always a pleasure. Looking forward to this evening.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got some more championship pedigree in the house right now. Jesse Dara is in the house. Minarets won a Central Section title yesterday in a wild one over Shafter. He's here at First Dream Sports. We're going to chop that up in just a second on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back. Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. Lots of baseball talk today. Oh, gosh, Jim Sandrini, man, that guy is a wealth of information. He had he probably had about 7 or 8 different sheets of stats and notes that he wanted to go over, but we didn't have enough time. So join us for the broadcast tonight between Bullard and Liberty Bakersfield. Again, 6 o'clock is the first pitch scheduled, 5:45 for pregame. Jesse Dara on the show right now. Minarets head coach won a Central Section championship last night, 10-9 over the number one seeded Shafter Generals. I followed Jesse's career for a while. Remember him pitching for Clovis West and Fowler and Fresno Pacific University. So thanks for coming in and good to meet you.
Thanks for having me, Paul. This is an amazing opportunity to highlight our team and our success from last night. Just thank you for the opportunity to be with you today.
So first thing, obviously, everything's fresh, right? It's probably had trouble sleeping last night. When you woke up this morning, what was like your prevailing thought?
Just a sense of peace and calm. It was a wild week to prepare our team. We spent a lot of time, a lot of energy, and, you know, it was a culmination of a ton of hard work and kind of just the peace that I felt this morning was pretty special, having a cup of coffee. It was quiet. It was just an amazing. I enjoyed myself this morning.
All right, so let's get into the game a little bit. I wasn't there. I was following best as possible on Twitter. Sounds like a wild one. 10-9. Just kind of walk us through maybe even the preparation for the game on the field. I know you're very familiar with the field as well. Like what was kind of the talk
before the game? What were you and your coaching staff preaching the week leading up and then leading into first pitch?
Well, we knew we were going to go play in a new environment. So it was very important for me throughout the week. We did a ton of visualizing. We did a ton of kind of putting ourselves in these situations before they happened. And I want to say that that was a major it really paid off for us. We took time even when we got there. We took our shoes off, the coaches and the players. We walked around the entire field slowly. We breathed. We just felt the stadium. We turned around and we saw what it looks like. We wanted to take every chance to kind of get that out of the way of, yeah, cool field, big stadium, Pro Park. Yeah, we know. And now we just go play baseball. So I want to say that that paid off a lot. We talked about throughout the week just keeping our confidence that we belonged there. I also want to kind of give a little hats off to the CIF. They did an awesome job in our bracket in the semifinals. It was the 1 through 4 seeds. And then in the final game, it was the 1 versus 2. And for us to have a game like we had, clearly they did it right and got it right. So really blessed to be on the winning side of that. But I wanted to give some kudos to the CIF. It was a first-class event. We had an absolute blast. It was run perfectly. The stadium is the – please keep it in Visalia. Yeah. That is the way to go. Keep it there. And it was just a special day that we'll never, ever forget.
And I know the relationship between the CIF and the Rawhide staff is great, great symbiotic relationship there. And, you know, the field is immaculate. It's in really good shape. So let's walk through the game, okay. Right? 10-9. Lots of stuff's going on, right? What's the Cliff's Notes version of how things went? Did you guys jump on a first? Did you guys have to counter? What did the game look like?
Yeah, it was a constant back-and-forth battle. Both teams just refused to quit, refused to lose. I want to give a lot of credit to Shafter as well. They are an excellent team. They really are. We are lucky to get out of there with the win. Even in the last out of the game, runner on second base, tying run on second. So it went down to the wire. We did answer, scored first. We scored one or two in the first, if I believe. They got one or two right back. And it was that way through the whole game. There was a couple of zeros there in the middle, but it fired up again towards the end with both teams putting runs on the board. But I like I said, I think that's the way a championship game ought to be. It was a battle the whole way through, and it came down to literally the last pitch. And thankful for us to be on the winning side.
All right, so let's describe that final out of the game. Just set it up. You mentioned a runner on second with two outs. Mm-hmm. How'd the game end?
Well, first of all, we had our dude on the mound, Torin Wolf. He's the heart and soul of our team. I had every confidence in him that I knew we were going to win. But yeah, the nerves were there. We had a 3-run lead going into the final inning there. They got a couple of hits. They got a little energy going. But, you know, our guys were able to kind of put it to bed. And I knew we had the right guy on the mound. And I knew we had the right team. And they pulled through.
So, yeah, so they got those two runs to make it interesting.
Yes, they did.
So talk about some of your dudes, right? Like how you guys were able to not only get to the championship game but win it. So who are some guys that you want to highlight that led you to the victory?
Well, I think the first of all is we are a team. This is not a team of 1, 2, or 3 that carried us. There are some significant impact players within that team. But truly, our lineup 1 through 9 is every bit as important to this outcome, this season. Even as you see there, Becca Mathewson, our six-hitter sophomore, came up with 3 humongous RBIs. So, yes, our big boys did carry us yesterday for sure, but the supporting cast was there as well. And when that whole lineup is working together the way it's kind of designed and we've come through the season preparing for, we're a tough lineup to face at our level, and there's no easy outs in that lineup. So, also, I will talk about the big boys. Torin Wolf, yeah. He's really the heart and soul, spirit of our team. He bats leadoff. He's 6'2". He's 200 pounds. He bats third for most teams in our level for sure. But he bats leadoff. If I'm not mistaken, he leads the section in runs scored. So that should give you a feel for how explosive our offense can really be. You know, he's always on. He's always running. One of the most savvy base runners I think I've ever coached. And then we have a big boy in the two-hole, Jamie Spurgeon, a big monster full of power and speed and athleticism. He hits the ball a mile He's a pretty special player to watch. He hit a couple yesterday that would have been 100 feet out at our park.
Wow.
But they just, you know, they stayed in Visalia, but they are hit well. And then I want to give a lot of credit to our three-hole hitter, Jaden Von Wagner. He doesn't always get the credit that I think he deserves because he's the protection for the two big boys at the top. And he's the key to the whole machine. And when those boys are setting the table and Jaden's hitting them in, we're a tough lineup to pitch around.
Yeah, glad you mentioned your two big boys, Torin and Jamie. You know, Torin, football guy. He's been on the show, won a Central Section champ. I want to get to that in just a second. Was Valley Central Section Championship, sorry, for the
yeah,
new wave.
I have to watch
right?
myself,
I know.
Too. Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Me too.
Was that something on your mind at the beginning of the year? How did you guys kind of navigate that as a staff? You know, I talked to Coach Shackelford, even when they were in a losing streak, after every huddle at the end of the practice, they were saying Valley, right? So they had that as a goal. How did you guys approach that? Because obviously you knew you had a good team and you could get this far, but how did you guys approach that during the season?
Well, it all started last year. Last year we didn't have a great season. Truthfully, we really weren't all that talented. But I feel as we did kind of turn it on there at the end, we made it to the semifinals of the Division VI bracket last year, and we returned almost everyone from that team. And then in addition, we had some newcomers join us that were good players. And literally from our first team meeting that we had this year, we discussed what our goals are. And it was unanimous. We are going to play in Valley. We're going to win Valley this year. You know, and so from day one, the tone was set. We committed to it. And for the entire season, we've had one thing on our minds, and that was winning Valley. And we did. Way to go. The theme we're kind of talking about today is we're saying mission accomplished. Way to go.
The football guys mentioned Torin, the quarterback, winning a Central Section title in football. Any other football guys on the baseball team?
A ton. At a school like ours, yeah, they're all football guys. You know? And I think it's just a great – our little school up in the mountains, for us to be successful in athletics, you know, the football team's got to win Valley, the basketball team's going to win Valley, and then the baseball team's going to win Valley, and it's all the same players, right? And so I'm really proud of that at our school. We have very few single-sport athletes. Yeah. Everyone is a multi-sport athlete. And the camaraderie, the teamwork, the history. These kids also, they all played Little League together. They played youth football together. They played our Babe Ruth program. So, I mean, these boys have been together for years, and I would be hard-pressed to see a more connected, tight-knit team community school than we really have, because we're pretty small, Paul. We only have about 450 kids and maybe 250 boys in the whole darn school. So for us to win a football Valley championship and a baseball Valley championship, it just says that this group is very, very special.
Well, broadcasting the championship game, and I'm sure you're there in football, it was kind of there was the fog, right? It was the game against Orosi, the fog. I just loved how that football stadium was set up. I can't think of where the baseball field is in relation to the football field. Where is it, and how does your baseball field look?
We have the coolest baseball field in the whole valley.
We got
to
get us there. Come on. Let's go.
You have got to see it. It is the coolest stadium ever, and I have a bit of a story. It is – how do I say this? I would say it's behind the visitor's section. You kind of go another 100 yards down, and then you can't see it because it's sunken. And if you come see it, you'll see that it is an exact replica of Fresno State Bulldogs baseball stadium. You take away the big stadium seating, but the concrete surround and the dugouts, exact replica. And there's some old wives' tales about how that all happened, but nonetheless, it's there. It's gorgeous. We have the view of the mountains like you can't believe. It's the best. So if you haven't been to Minaret's baseball field, you have got to come check it out for yourself. We are so lucky.
I'm going to have to do that. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, the football stadium, how it's laid out, and obviously the air is cleaner and crisper, right?
Sure.
And all that good
for
stuff
sure.
that makes the mountain stadiums really, really cool. I want to go back a little bit to Visalia.
Okay.
You know that ballpark. You pitched in that ballpark?
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah, I did, certainly. Many times.
Tell me about it. What years?
A whole lot of home runs there. That was actually – I pitched Visalia. It was my last year of pro baseball, my last season. I was running on fumes by then. My shoulder was killing me.
But you didn't tell anybody, right?
Oh, heck no. I still powered through. And, so I remember – I think my first start, I got to pitch against Jordan Rivera, another local guy in Visalia Rawhide. Got to play against a bunch of local guys in the Cal League. But, man, for a pitcher, I tell you, you really don't want to play in Visalia all that much. So it's where some careers go to die for pitchers. But nonetheless, the atmosphere is amazing. The way the stands and the fans are just right on top of the game, it's hard to replicate. In today's day, the current new stadiums, you know, we're all high and far back from the field. It's a special place to play. And all the Visalia schools that get to, like, play there throughout the season are so lucky. But, man, it's a special place. It's the first, last time most of our guys are ever going to play on a pro field. So I hope they enjoyed it. I know they did, and we soaked it in.
Did the kids know that you pitched there? Did you tell them some old war stories or not really?
I try to stay away from that because, truthfully, I don't think they care that much. It's all about them. And I talk about that a lot is I don't have any skin in this game, and this is all about them. I've lived that part of my life. I've been a player. I've been everywhere. I've done everything. That's not why I do this, Paul. It's for them to experience those same feelings and emotions that I got to as a player, because I cherish them like you can't believe. And I know what the impact that they have on someone's life in the long run are. And that's what I want them to experience. And they got to do it yesterday. And that was the most rewarding part of the entire season. You know, my whole coaching career.
Is that something that took you a while? Let's be honest here, Jesse. I want to get into your coaching journey a little bit. But as a coach, right, as a young coach, a lot of coaches can maybe relate to this where they kind of do make it about them, right? You want to win a championship. You want to relive your days, whatever the reason may be. But was that kind of – did you have to struggle with that a little bit? Like making it more about the kids when you first started coaching, or were you all in with the kids? Like, did you get it pretty early in your coaching career?
To be honest with you, Paul, it took me a little while. You know, I'll be honest. I got my first head coaching job at Minarets. It's been my only head coaching job when I was 26 years old. And I tell people I was unprepared, unworthy, all the above of that opportunity. But for some reason, my resume gave me that opportunity. And at first, yeah, I felt like I needed to prove myself as a coach somehow and wanted to grind out as many wins as we possibly could. But it took me, you know, growing up a little bit, I'm 36 now, to realize really what this is all about. And I am the least important part of this story as anyone.
That's good that you figured it out. At age 36, right? Sometimes it takes people a lot longer. All right, so when you did first start, like, How did that all go about? You mentioned pro ball and your giving out and all that stuff. So you gave up that, and then you got into coaching pretty quick. Yeah. What do you remember about that time jumping in as the head coach at Minarets?
It happened fast. My career was over. This is a while ago now, but I remember reaching out to one of my biggest mentors in life, which is Bill Fever, the head coach at Fowler High School. We are, to this day, we talk, you know, about once a week, about whatever. Also, when I first started coaching, I would call him about five times a day because I didn't know what to do. And then maybe year two, it'd go down to maybe once a week where I didn't know what to do. And then maybe once a month, I didn't know what to do. And then now I only call him to kind of talk about the good things. So thankful for him, first of all. He's been my mentor since I started coaching. And back to my story. I reached out to coach and I said, hey, I'm done playing. What do I do? I don't know what to do. And he said, well, why don't you just come coach with me and then we'll figure it out. So I went and coached at Fowler for one season. I was the pitching coach, but, you know, we all coach everything. And then we had a good season. I don't think we made it all the way, but we had a good season. And then this opportunity at this little tiny high school up in the mountains called Minarets opened up. And the truth is I didn't know what Minarets was. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey coach, or he's talking to me, you know, hey man, there's a job up here that I think you should take a look at called Minarets. And, you know, I had, aspirations to be a head coach. It sounded pretty cool. I wanted to be like Coach Fever. And so, you know, he kind of really initiated that for me. He reached out to the former coach, the administration, and said, hey, there's this guy here that if you guys know what you're doing, I think this would be a good move. So I attribute a lot of getting the job to Coach Fever. He stuck his neck out for me a little bit. And then that's how I wound up at Minarets as a 26-year-old first-year head coach with a beautiful ballpark, a wonderful community that embraced me from day one. And look where we are today, Division Five champions.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you took a little break and then returned year three?
This is my second year back.
Your second year
so
back.
So I took a hiatus there. I went and worked for the family business for a few years. And then, you know, I couldn't stay away. You know, I missed it. I watched, you know, them playing without me and felt a little bit of FOMO, if you would.
Yeah.
And, you know, the opportunity arose again to come back, and I seized it. I also want to give a little credit to my wife, who's a teacher at the school as well. So getting to work with my wife every day is a really special opportunity for us. And it just is an opportunity I had to get back in.
That's awesome. And here you are sitting as a Central Section champion. What are going to be some of your, again, I'm sure the memories are fresh. You still have some baseball left to play, right? State playoffs?
We're playing, yeah. We got practice on Monday. We got a ball game on Tuesday. I think we find out Sunday sometime.
Correct. Yes.
And we're eager for that. We look forward to it.
What are some lasting memories that you're going to have with this team? You know, no matter what happens in the state playoffs, that's probably gravy. It's going to be the cherry on top. Bonus baseball for you guys, but what's going to be some things that you really remember about this year's squad?
Well, I'm still working on those, Paul. To be honest, I'm still kind of processing this season. I'm processing yesterday, but I want to say that I've told the team is that going out to practice every day with this team is the best part of my day every single day.
Yeah.
The 2-3 hours we get to spend together is special and worth it. I never ever dread going to practice ever, and they don't either, and that's why it's so much fun. It's just I feel so lucky to be a part of it. They are the greatest kids. They got their quirks, and you know,
high school kids.
Yeah. For sure.
You were a kid once too.
Absolutely. But you know, when you spend so much time with these people, you get to know people's hearts, and that's what I can believe in. And that's what I can, you know, connect with them. And I would go to battle with this team any day versus anyone. And I'd take us over the Yankees yesterday.
It's awesome. Good stuff. Again, thanks for coming on. I texted you, I think probably only like 45 minutes after your win, you got back to me and was able to come on the show and share your story and talk about this great team that you were able to coach this year. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it, Jesse.
Paul, thank you so much.
Good stuff. All right. That is a wrap for today. Tons of baseball stuff, man. Good stuff here in the Central Section. Thanks to Jorge for producing the show. Thanks to First String Sports. Thanks to Aaron Shackelford, Julie Morales, Jim Sandrini, and of course, Coach Dara right here. Remember, tonight, Bullard, Liberty, on the call. 6 o'clock first pitch, 5:45 pregame on 1430 ESPN. You can also listen on your phone or computer or while you're driving around and checking stuff out. Thanks you guys for listening and for all of your great feedback and for just being a part of this wonderful Central Section. Have a great rest of your week, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.